Hello, this is Ms. Stell with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, May 11th, 2026. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headline, Chiefs Brace for Booming July 4th. Dry Climate, Fireworks Demand Up Ahead of 250th U.S. Birthday. America will mark its milestone birthday this summer with a bang, quite a few actually. Ahead of the country's 250th anniversary, firework retailers and pyrotechnicians said they're seeing surging demand from coast to coast. Communities are preparing giant shows, and families are looking to spice up their backyard barbecues. Independence Day is going to be the grandest 4th of July that we've seen in 50 years, said Julie Heckman, executive director of the American Pyrotechnic Association, a trade group. Phantom Fireworks, the largest firework chain in the country, has already seen an uptick in traffic and is expecting its greatest sales ever, said Vice President Jessica Dragoo. Everybody's gearing up for it. But not everyone is excited. Fire officials in drought-stricken western states say the expanded uptick in explosives is ratcheting up their anxiety. We are definitely bracing for what could be an unusually busy summer as people celebrate, said California State Fire Marshal Daniel Berlant. Fireworks spark tens of thousands of wildfires across the United States each year, causing deaths, injuries, and millions of dollars in property damage. In mid-April, a blaze tore through more than 10 acres in Lake City, Florida, in the northern part of the state, after embers from a firework ignited dry vegetation. Out west, officials are on especially high alert. Low winter snowfall and hotter than normal temperatures have set the stage for what's expected to be a dangerously dry summer. Some areas have already begun restricting water usage. A single errant firework ember could smolder acres of land. Chris Burnett, Fire and Life Safety Section Chief for the Colorado Division of Fire Prevention and Control, said the state is very concerned with the dry landscape. While he acknowledged this summer will be drier than most, Burnett said Colorado is used to arid conditions. His team is warning people about which fireworks are off-limits and how to dispose of them properly. Anything that shoots off the ground or explodes, like bottle rockets, cherry bombs, and mortars, isn't allowed in the state. But Burnett said he isn't blind to people's desire to celebrate. That's why, hearkening back to the nation's founding era, the state is promoting bucket brigades to limit the damage of illegal fireworks. At the time of the American Revolution, the term referred to a line of colonists who would pass down buckets of water to help quench a neighborhood fire. Colorado is using the term to encourage people to soak spent fireworks in a bucket outside overnight. While people in Colorado are all too aware of the wildfire threats, Burnett said, it can be enticing for them to drive to another state and buy illegal fireworks. Most fireworks enter the United States from ports in Southern California. Berlant said he's seen an explosive growth of illegal fireworks pouring into the country in recent years. Most of the explosions and even injuries are from illegal fireworks or the unsafe usage of fireworks, he said. Deaths and injuries related to fireworks skyrocketed last year, with firework-related injuries rising by 52% year over year, according to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. While states determine what types of fireworks they allow, the federal government sets baseline safety standards. In 2025, Berlant's agency confiscated millions of pounds of pyrotechnics that didn't meet those requirements, though that wasn't enough. Seven people were killed in a July 1st explosion at an illegal fireworks warehouse in Northern California. In early April, eight people were charged in connection with the incident. This year, Berlant said, fire and law enforcement agencies are working together in California to stop illegal distributors. While education is number one, enforcement of keeping the illegal fireworks off our streets really has been an increased strategy, Burnett said. Military veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder can experience distress from the sudden loud bangs and vibrations of fireworks. And with more fireworks than ever expected to dot the night sky across the country this year, some worry there will be fewer ways to avoid such anguish. Passageways, a non-profit that helps veterans in Kansas, is hosting a 12-hour party for a small group of veterans at an underground salt mine museum. The event will feature barbecue ribs and brisket, games, giveaways, sleeping bags, and notably, no fireworks. In the 600-foot deep cavern, attendees will not be able to hear, feel, or see any of the fireworks above. Passageways co-founder Jennifer Garrison said she received a phone call from a veteran who had tried everything from earplugs to noise-canceling headphones to block out firework noise. After registering for the event, she said, he told her, "I don't think I have to suffer this year." It brings to front of mind all the veterans that got us to where we are and everything we've been through so that we can have the freedoms we have, Garrison said. Our next front page article, Farmers Shun USDA Surveys. Growers wary of giving data to feds as report accuracy is questioned. American farmers are ignoring U.S. Department of Agriculture surveys in the latest sign of distrust in government data. Reply rates for the USDA's annual prospective planting report sank in March to a record low, with just over a third of 73,800 farm operations surveyed answering questions on the acres they will plant this spring, of everything from corn and soybeans to tobacco and chickpeas. That compares with about 60% of farmers responding in 2018, with replies declining in each year since, according to government records. Farmers say they are wary of sharing data to inform reports they believe often work against them, especially with abundant harvests in recent years, keeping crop prices under pressure. The mounting skepticism comes as the USDA is looking to become more responsive to farmers through a transformation that relies heavily on shared data. It also echoes a broader loss of trust in government data, particularly as President Donald Trump has called into question federal statistics and information, from job reports to voter tallies and even weather maps. Iowa farmer Ben Reinsche says the agency's various surveys are too arduous and the markets often slump after the corresponding reports are released, affecting what they get paid for their crops. "I don't trust the data. I don't trust the process. I don't trust their people," Reinsche said, and they monkey with my business. The trend may present complications for Trump's efforts to court farmers, a key voting bloc for him in the Republican Party. He has repeatedly hosted farmers at the White House, unveiling a $12 billion aid package for them in December, then holding a celebration of agriculture, complete with a gold-colored tractor, on the White House lawn in March. Intelligence from the farm is the lifeblood of the USDA's reports, resulting in findings and forecasts that influence the direction of global crop prices and ultimately helps determine how much consumers pay for food. But distrust of the USDA's conclusions is creating a vicious circle, with the lack of contributions making the agency's reports less accurate and in turn generating more farmer skepticism. That lack of accuracy also is resulting in more volatility in futures markets. A case in point is the January crops report from the USDA, which surprised the market when the agency unexpectedly boosted its estimate for the U.S. corn crop by 1.6% to a record 17.021 billion bushels. Most had been anticipating a slight downward revision from the USDA's previous forecast, and futures in Chicago subsequently posted their biggest daily decline in years. While it was known that farmers shifted heavily toward corn during the growing season, particularly after China halted its purchases of American soybeans, the unexpected increase in supply blindsided many. When the USDA is that far off without much explanation, it creates distrust in future reports, Darren Labar, who grows corn, soybeans, and wheat in Michigan, wrote to the USDA. He was one of 240 people who answered a request by the agency seeking feedback on ways to improve its data collection. You have to be able to trust the information that you're given, and if you can't even trust that, then why even do the report, he said in an interview. USDA Secretary Brooke Rollins said after the January report that the agency wanted to ensure it wasn't driving price outcomes. Deputy Secretary Stephen Vadden also addressed the issue at the agency's annual spring meeting with its data users. We understand the data that we provide moves markets. We understand that it affects individual planning decisions by farmers, and therefore we know that the data we provide needs to be correct, he said. The National Agriculture Statistics Service, in an emailed statement, said it was working to address declining response rates and remains committed to providing timely, accurate, and useful statistics in service to American agriculture. Montana farmer Sarah Den said she has little faith in the reports because she knows producers, herself included, often fill them out while pressed for time and distracted by all their responsibilities on the farm. Few have time to sit down and pull out the spreadsheets and other records they need to give accurate answers, she said. If you're in a hurry, you're just trying to remember the numbers off the top of your head, said Den. So I've always questioned the accuracy. Former USDA chief economist Seth Meyer is intimately familiar with the issues. He views the data the agency collects from farmers as the backbone of all the analysis and aid it provides for the agriculture sector. So when farmers don't participate, he said, the data suffers, and then farmers lose even more faith in the USDA's findings. This isn't the farmer's fault per se, but it also can't be solved without them, said Meyer, now director of the University of Missouri's Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. The USDA has to go out and say, hey, there's good reason that you might want to do this. The information the agency solicits is used to, among other things, track crop plantings and harvests and estimate domestic and global inventories and demands. USDA Undersecretary Richard Fordyce sees a potential solution in the agency's new One Farmer, One File initiative. The program is meant to streamline the way the USDA gets and internally shares the information on crops and farms it requires from growers looking to qualify for federal loans. Fordyce has been talking with colleagues about whether that information could be shared for survey purposes. We probably have some of that data, Fordyce said. We could probably help pre-populate survey responses. Stephen Nicholson, head of crops at agriculture lender Rabobank, worries that low participation is eroding the agency's reputation as a gold standard of agricultural information. I don't want to lose that standard, Nicholson said, adding that he encourages farmers to fill out the surveys. That gives the market better data, better information. Our next and last front page article, legislation expels students for committing sexual crimes. Springfield. The Illinois Senate advanced a plan Thursday that would ensure students who commit sexually violent crimes can be expelled from school. the chamber voted 48-3, with two voting present, to pass Senate Bill 939, sponsored by Senator Steve McClure, Republican of Springfield, which would require students who initiate sexual assault to be expelled for at least 1 year, or at least 6 months for initiating non-consensual sexual acts. The bill would apply to incidents that happen at school, school property such as buses, and school-related events. The bill was filed last year after an incident in Taylorville, where a 10-year-old girl was allegedly sexually assaulted by a 14-year-old male student on the bus, who then chased the girl from the bus stop and raped her, according to the girl's mother. She obtained an order of protection, and the student was removed from the school for the rest of the semester, but later returned. The girl's family sued the Taylorville School District and bus company last year over violations of federal Title IX rights, negligence, and emotional distress. This bill is really important because it's going to be needed, and it's going to help survivors of sexual violence who are having a hard time as it is after one of these situations, let alone having to go to school and see the person who did that to you right there all the time, McClure said. He said similar incidents have happened in other districts, including an assault on a 4-year-old girl by a 15-year-old boy in western Illinois. The issue, McClure said, is that state law lacks clear guidelines on what schools should do with sexual assault situations. Most schools do the right thing, but in a lot of cases I continue hearing about the school is not doing the right thing, and that is why this bill is necessary, McClure said. According to the bill, students may be removed from their school but would still be eligible to attend alternative learning centers. Superintendents would also have the power to modify punishments on a case-by-case basis and must consider a student's ability to understand their actions. And any disability they might have would also have to be considered when schools assess what direction to go with the situation. We want both sides to get help here, and we want to get the student on the right path, McClure said. Democratic Senators Mike Simons of Chicago, Rachel Ventura Joliet, and Karina Villa of West Chicago voted against the bill. Right now, schools are allowed to expel students, Villa said. In fact, in this case, that was talked about that drove this legislation. The child did end up getting expelled. There's no need to continue to find punitive ways to attack our children. Instead, let's take the cases case by case. There's no need for this bill. Ventura said she is concerned two consenting students would get caught up in the law. My concern with the bill is by mandating school boards automatically expel students not because of the situation, but because of fear of not following a state mandate, Ventura said. McClure responded only non-consensual incidents would be punished under the bill, and that his legislation only adds a type of scenario where a student could be expelled and does not change any other parts of state law that govern expulsion processes. Accused students will still be entitled to a hearing. The bill now heads to the House, where Representative C.D. Davidsmeyer, Republican Murrayville, sponsored a similar measure earlier this year that was unanimously advanced out of committee, but did not receive a vote in the chamber before an April deadline. Our next article from Decatur, police are investigating after an argument apparently led to a gunshot being fired in the front yard of a Decatur home Saturday evening. Patrol officers were called to the 2000 block of East Clay Street just before 5 p.m. in response to reports of a gunshot. Sergeant Justin Closen with the Decatur Police Department said witnesses reported hearing an argument between two people in the front yard of a nearby house and then hearing a loud pop sound. One of the men involved in the argument is heard saying, "Why did you do that so close to me?" And a man is seen running up to a front porch on East Clay, but didn't enter the residence, Closen added. That same subject then ran to a Mercury sedan and left at a high rate of speed, saying he'd be back in a few minutes, but he never returned. Investigating officers found one spent shell casing on the sidewalk and spoke to a woman at the scene who was not cooperative, Closen said, speaking Sunday. No arrests have been made and investigations are continuing. Our next article, Trump administration abortion opponents press White House. Frustrated abortion opponents met with White House officials Friday amid growing criticism in the anti-abortion movement that President Donald Trump has not moved aggressively enough to advance key priorities, including new restrictions and stronger enforcement. The guest list for the meeting was not disclosed, but Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, said its influential president, Marjorie Damensfelser, attended. Marjorie had a very constructive meeting at the White House today, said Kelsey Pritchard, a spokesperson for the group. Earlier this week, Damensfelser told the Wall Street Journal that abortions have risen in the United States since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, adding that Trump is the problem. Tensions have grown between Trump and parts of the anti-abortion movement that are among his strongest political allies during his first presidential campaign. While activists credit Trump for helping overturn Roe v. Wade through his Supreme Court appointments, some groups say the administration has not followed through with aggressive federal action to stop abortion access, including tighter restrictions on the abortion pill mifepristone and enforcement against online pill distributors. Since Roe's overturning, Trump repeatedly said abortion policy should be decided by individual states. White House spokesman Allison Schuster defended the administration's record. President Trump is the most pro-life and pro-family president in American history, and his administration has announced a series of bold actions to safeguard life and uphold Americans' fundamental freedoms, including ending federal funding of abortion abroad, Schuster said in a statement. Data from the Guttmacher Institute, a research group, show abortions have risen since the Supreme Court's 2022 ruling, overturning its decision, making abortion legal nationwide with an estimated 1,126,000 provided by clinicians in 2025, the highest since 2009, driven largely by the expanded use of abortion pills, which now account for 65% of abortions in states where the procedure is legal. The pressure campaign intensified in recent months as Republican lawmakers and anti-abortion groups pushed the Food and Drug Administration to revisit safety rules surrounding mifepristone, which is used in more than half of the U.S. abortions. State Republicans in March launched a probe into abortion pill manufacturers and urged the Food and Drug Administration to crack down on online sales of the drug. The White House signed off on a plan to fire FDA Commissioner Marty McCarry, sources familiar with the matter said on Friday. McCarry has been under growing pressure to produce a safety review of mifepristone, and Damensfelser reviewed her call this week to fire him. A debate over abortion medication has escalated following a series of court rulings over mail-order access to mifepristone. This week, the U.S. Supreme Court temporarily restored access to the drug through telemedicine and mail delivery while litigation continues. Our next article, U.S. looks to tap oil under military bases. The Trump administration is studying using oil under land at U.S. military bases and other Department of Defense sites to help refill the nation's depleted emergency reserves, according to a person familiar with the matter. No decision has been made on the possible initiative, said the person who asked not to be named discussing private information. The move comes as the administration has vowed to find innovative ways to fill the strategic petroleum reserve, which has seen additional declines during the Iran war. The Energy Department didn't respond to a request for comment. The reserve, created in the aftermath of the Arab oil embargo in the 1970s, is poised to reach its lowest level since 1982. The Biden administration oversaw a historic drawdown meant to tame skyrocketing gasoline prices after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and reserves declined further after President Donald Trump ordered a 172 million barrel release to help ease soaring energy prices in the face of the conflict with Iran. The near closure of the Strait of Hormuz has sparked a global fuel crunch, and consumers are getting saddled with soaring prices. The U.S. retail price for gasoline this week topped $4.50 a gallon for the first time since July 2022, extending their march higher just as Americans prepare for the busy summer travel season. A project to drill under military bases is unlikely to have any immediate impact on energy prices, but could allow the U.S. government to outright own the oil produced and not need to make purchases from private producers to replenish inventories. The Biden administration has begun slowly refilling the emergency cache, but ran out of funding to buy more crude. The Trump administration has said it considers refilling the reserves a national security issue. Energy Secretary Chris Wright alluded to the possible initiative at the forum last month, saying the administration planned to do pragmatic things with energy resources under federal control and that creative ways were needed to refill the reserve. We have military bases or facilities that are in the middle of oil fields, but there's no development under those resources. That's crazy. It's right there, Wright said in an event held by the Wall Street Journal. We will see some creative things. It wasn't immediately clear what Department of Defense sites were under consideration. In September 2025, the Trump administration sold the rights to drill for oil and gas under nearly 2,000 acres of land on Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana, one of two U.S. Air Force bases that host B-52 bombers. Though it's not very common, drilling at military bases wouldn't be entirely novel. Oil and gas leases have been allowed for decades at Barksdale. In all, some 29.4 billion barrels of technically recoverable oil, along with 391 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, exist under federal lands, including property owned by the Department of Defense, the Interior Department, and other agencies, according to a 2025 analysis by the U.S. Geological Survey. Trump, who has bashed former President Joe Biden for draining the reserve, vowed on his first day in office to refill the massive oil cache right to the top, but Congress has been reluctant to furnish the billions of dollars needed to do so. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, May 11th, 2026. Please stay tuned.